Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nabisco is releasing limited edition Game of Thrones Oreos in honor of the show's final season. The way it works is you eat 7 of them, and then you have to wait 3 years before you can have another.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to Saturday Night Live's Heidi Gardner. Plus, just for this podcast, Heidi takes a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, Seth checks in on the debate over prescription drug costs under the Trump administration.
President Trump claimed he would be able to fix an issue that both Democrats and Republicans can agree on, the skyrocketing costs of prescription drugs. But while one party has a plan, the other party, well, they have Trump. For more, this is The Check-In. For years, prescription drug prices in this country have been soaring, largely because our government, for the most part, does not negotiate the price of medication. That means pharmaceutical companies can charge whatever they want. Things have gotten so bad that some Americans are forced to go abroad to get life-saving medication like insulin. And one of those destinations abroad is fairly ironic.
Robin is headed to the Mexican border, where we meet a group that saw her post on Instagram about insulin in Tijuana costing a fraction of what it does in the U.S.
Just cross the border, you're just typing in pharmacy into Google Maps, and then off we go?
And then off we go.
They've decided it's worth the risk to go to one of Mexico's most dangerous cities, as insulin prices in the U.S. have more than doubled in recent years.
So that's where we are as a country right now. Trump's trying to build a wall to prevent outsiders from coming in, while Americans are forced to cross the border into Mexico just to get affordable medication. So, hey, if Mexico won't pay for the wall, maybe Pfizer will. Now, several prominent Democrats, like Senator Bernie Sanders, have been introducing legislation that would cut prescription drug prices by allowing Medicare to negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies. Sanders was asked about his plans to reduce costs at a town hall yesterday.
How do you plan to ensure the cost of medications like insulin won't continue to rise and that people over profit will hopefully become the norm in this country?
Oh, you're asking me a question that I have worked on for a long, long time.
Yes, sir.
Don't get me going.
You know, I like how even Bernie Sanders knows not to get him going on healthcare. I'm sure at every dinner party he's invited to, the host says to the other guests, Bernie is coming, so don't mention healthcare. Now, part of the reason Democrats have to keep reintroducing legislation to lower drug costs is because President Trump still hasn't fulfilled his promises on this issue. Just last year, he stood in the Rose Garden surrounded by cabinet members and Republican lawmakers and vowed to lower costs by going after those who have personally benefited from higher drug prices.
We're going to take on one of the biggest obstacles to affordable medicine, the tangled web of special interests. Not too many are sitting here today, but they used to be here all the time.
A nice sentiment, but unfortunately, most of the people there do take massive campaign donations from pharmaceutical companies. They are the special interests. Are you having trouble seeing them? If so, maybe it's time you asked your doctor about Lodamax. Lodamax. So you can clearly see that you're full of By the way, are you full of If so, ask your doctor about Dulcolax. Now, to be fair, politicians from both parties have willingly taken money from drug companies for years. But now Trump is in charge, and mere months after his announcement about reducing drug costs, he boldly proclaimed that he had succeeded.
Every day, it's promises made, promises kept. We've taken bold action to reduce the price of prescription drugs. We're reducing the price. You know, I called up Pfizer and some of the great drug companies. They're great companies. Novartis, a couple of others, about a month ago, because they raised the price of their drugs. And I called, I said, what are you doing? You can't do that. And they said, sir, we will immediately drop the price down to where it was. Can you believe that? Can you believe it?
No. No, we can't believe it, because you're doing that thing again where you describe being president the way you want it to be instead of the way it actually is.
I called up Pfizer and said, lower your prices, and they said, right away, sir. And then I hung up the phone and looked out the window right as a gust of wind blew the top off a hot lady. This job rules.
And not only does Trump think he can just call up drug companies and single-handedly tell them what to do, he also complained he isn't getting any credit for it.
Might as well talk about yourself, because nobody else is going to. Nobody else is going to. Nobody else.
I'm sorry, do you really think people aren't talking about you enough? The only people not talking about you are those undiscovered tribes in the Amazon. And even they feel something eerie in the wind. You guys, I feel like we should go deeper into the rainforest. This is just a hunch. Just a hunch. Before Trump's proposal even went into effect, he was already telling his supporters that drug costs were decreasing.
We signed a bill. Prescription drug prices are going to come tumbling down. Tumbling down. So, hopefully you don't need prescription drugs, but if you do, you're going to get them a hell of a lot cheaper because it's going this way.
That's the president's finger telling you that prices are going down, or maybe that you can get the same drugs much cheaper in Mexico. But who? Who are you going to believe, the president's finger or the facts?
Bitter pills this new year for Americans taking prescription drugs. 60 companies raised prices on almost 300 drugs in the first 2 days of the year.
The first 2 days! They couldn't even wait a week. That's how little shame these drug companies have and how little regard they have for our president.
I called them up and I said, lower your prices. And they said, new phone, who dis? And then I looked out the window just after a gust of wind blew a turtleneck onto a hot lady.
Now, during his State of the Union address, Trump also mentioned that people in other countries pay much less for prescription drugs than Americans, and he's right. But judging by how at least one powerful senator reacted to that, we probably shouldn't expect to see much change on that front from Republicans either.
I am asking Congress to pass legislation that finally takes on the problem of global freeloading and delivers fairness and price transparency for American patients, finally.
Look how sad Mitch McConnell is. Looks like he just found out who won the Civil War.
Who? Aw. Was it close?
But I guess we shouldn't be surprised that McConnell had that reaction, because in 2018 alone, he racked up almost $1 million from the insurance industry and over $500,000 from the pharmaceutical and health products industry. And that's why, when someone promises to lower the cost of drugs, even if they're lying, the truth is that your senator can't even smile. This has been The Check-In.
Hey, everyone. Amber Ruffin here, and I'm with
Jenny Hagel.
We have some exciting news. We're returning to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
We'll be doing a show called Late Night Trash Can, where we will perform some jokes and bits that we wrote for the show that never made it to air, and talking about why that happened.
It's going to be live on Saturday, March 9th at 3:30 p.m. You can check the South by Southwest website for more info.
If you're in Austin, come check it out.
And if you're not in Austin, too bad. Just kidding. The show will be released on the following Monday right here on the Late Night Podcast.
Either way, check it out. Bye.
Bye.
Our guest is a very funny actress and comedian you know from Saturday Night Live. She stars in the animated series Alien News Desk, which premieres Wednesday, February 27th at 11 p.m. on Sci-Fi. Please welcome to the show Heidi Gardner, everyone. Hi. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
I want to talk about SNL, but you, for those who didn't notice his voice, you're one of the voices of these alien news anchors, and the other one is Will Forte.
Yeah.
Who I, of course, shared a lot of time with at SNL. Did you know Will before this?
No. I mean, I knew MacGruber.
Yeah, who doesn't?
I know.
Yeah, if you saw the box office numbers, everyone knows MacGruber.
I mean, it should be the biggest movie of all time.
It really should. I think that 100 years from now, people are going to look back and say, why wasn't this the best movie of that year?
Yeah.
They're going to be far less angry about Green Book than they will be a MacGruber.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And you guys, you can kind of tell from the clip, you are aliens who do a news report about Earth who don't really get much of it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's how we see humans, which is hilarious and weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You have, we were talking with Patton about how much he loves comic books. He's doing a couple comic book adaptations. You married a comic book writer.
Yep.
He's backstage right now. Was that something you were into early on in your life? Did you know comics at all?
Well, I knew it because of my dad and my older brother. And they were buying, like, the Image comics.
Sure.
And they were cool. And then I was buying, like, the Betty and Veronica Jughead series.
Well, guess what? Joke's on them, because that's, like, the biggest show in the world right now.
Yeah.
So.
And
it's, like,
Image,
gritty. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Where's Image Comics now?
Yeah.
I mean, they might still.
They are still, I think, yeah.
Okay.
I think this is true of a lot of people who start in SNL, is one of the best places to find your footing and have characters that resonate with people is at the update desk. That's been very true of you. These are some of my favorites of yours. That's Angel. She's every boxer's girlfriend. Baskin, right?
Yeah.
Baskin works at Goop.
Yeah.
And then Brie is one half of an Instagram couple.
Yeah.
They're all wonderful.
Thank you.
Do you feel comfortable at the update desk?
Well, I don't know that you could ever feel comfortable and cool, but I have a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
And you just get to fully inhabit a character for 2.5 minutes.
Yep.
And play with the,
updating. Yeah, and one of the things I liked about it as well, you don't have to worry about where to look as much. You just get to kind of play out and be presentational, and that's really nice. When you're used to being on stage, it's a little bit more, it was more familiar for me than getting in sketch stuff.
Yes.
I should say one of my favorite things I did when I went back and hosted was we were two people who just came back from Cuba.
Yeah.
And then I was so happy to see you did it again. You and James McAvoy were not in New Orleans. You were in...
Nolens.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, a really gross character that I was happy to see again.
Yeah.
Also, one of the fun things was I'd been a fan of yours and we got to talk when I was at the show. And you were a hairdresser in L.A.
Yes.
For a while.
Yeah.
And then you started taking improv classes and did any of the... Basically, you had to then tell your clients that you were quitting.
Yeah. And I hadn't told them that I had this improv sketch comedy hobby. So after 9 years, I was like, yeah, I'm leaving you, basically. and they're like, why? I'm like, well, I'm going to pursue comedy. And they're like... Are you funny? And I was like, I think I'm not a funny hairdresser, but...
Also, nobody wants a funny hairdresser.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, you haven't been funny for 9 years. I'm like, oh, is that what you wanted?
Yeah.
You wanted me to do big comedy choices while I was cutting your hair?
Yeah.
And then do you do it anymore for anyone?
No. No, I don't. Yeah. But I do like to go into the hair and makeup room at SNL. Like, and sometimes I smell chemicals and dyes. And it's kind of like your mom's, like, home cooking or something. I'll run back and I'll be like, that's shades EQ. That's hairdresser lingo. Yeah.
Do they like that? Are they like, hey, this is our territory? Or do they are they like, you're in our family?
They're like, you're in our family. They're like, that's our girl.
Right? That's very nice. It's great to have someone who lived in both worlds, which are obviously a huge part of SNL. I know you got to go to the All-Star game this year and that you're a huge basketball fan, a huge sports fan. You are from Kansas City, no team.
No team.
But a big, safe to say you're a big LeBron fan?
Ooh, I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah. we tried to verify if you were a real fan or not. So we went on your Instagram, and these are just some of your posts. also, I should know, this is from the last day.
Yeah.
You like the guy.
I do.
We are a big you're a Chiefs fan, I'm a Steelers fan, which means we have one thing in common.
Hate the Patriots.
Hate the Patriots, yeah. Hate the Patriots so much.
I mean, I want to be fair and just say I get it. Tom Brady, I mean.
I get it, too.
Go.
Jealous of it. Wish I had it.
Please let it in.
Let it end. Stop. I was mad at the Chiefs because once the Steelers were out, I said, I don't want to watch any football. And then someone said, hey, the Chiefs just came back against the Patriots. Turn on the TV and the Patriots win. I'm like, again?
I know.
I didn't even want to watch it. But hopefully better times are ahead for both of us. I feel very positive about your team. Optimistic looking forward. And thank you so much for being here. It's just such
a
delight to see you.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah from Late Night. I'm backstage with Heidi Gardner. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
So I think there's a little bit of mystique, I would say, from viewers about SNL in terms of the schedule. Today is Tuesday. So what does that mean for you in terms of what this day is like?
So Tuesday's writing night, which means I'm going to be up all night writing. I usually try to get in, you know, around 2 o'clock and then... You know, sometimes you go till 6 a.m., sometimes later. It's an all-nighter.
And then you go home and shower and come back, like, at a reasonable hour or later on?
Yeah, I'll go home, go to bed, get up, shower, and then get back into SNL before the table read around, like, 2:30. So and there's a little bit of time.
So then what happens from the table read Wednesday until the show?
From then, you find out... That night, Wednesday, what gets in the show, if it's a sketch of yours that gets in, you kind of go right into production. Like, you meet with hair and makeup, you meet with wardrobe, with props, with set to just, like, tell them your vision, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday, rehearsals start in the studio. You rehearse half the sketches. You do fittings for the pre-tapes that get filmed the next day. And then Friday, the rest of the sketches get rehearsed in the studio, and you could be on a couple of the pre-tapes, so you're, like, going from location to studio to another location. And, you know, I've had times where I, like, have a call time at 5 a.m., and then I'm working till 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, you're in the studio at 12:30 to rehearse, and it's straight through.
That's wild.
That's insane.
So you said you meet with costume and set to come up with a vision for the sketch right after they're picked.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a difference for you in terms of familiarity between last season and this season? Like, how you approach that? And do you feel like you know a little bit more about how to navigate those waters?
Yeah, and I feel like just more trust. It's like after, I mean, I knew this from the beginning, but, you know, hair, makeup, wardrobe, they've been... there for so long. They know, like, they kind of immediately know once you say, like, one descriptive word, like, bohemian. They're like, we got it. They pretty much know how to nail your vision. And, or they're like, send us a couple pics, like, in the next day. And
what was the most intimidating thing starting, besides, like, am I going to be good at this? Or am I going to get fired tomorrow? Like, what was the most, like, the scariest thing that you felt like you had to overcome during that first season?
Well, biggest thing was, you know, live in front of millions of people. But I tried to calm myself down by being like, well, I'm still performing for an audience in a studio. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I kind of thought about that and not just like what was beyond the camera. That calmed me at first. And then also just, you know, it's like you're the new kid in school. So it's like knocking on people's doors, being like, do you want to write together? So it does kind of, like, you know, the first couple of weeks I wrote in my office alone, like, eat lunch in the bathroom stall alone. You know, it's just very similar.
And yeah.
Not that everyone was welcoming. You're just scared.
Right.
I was.
Yeah. What does your family think of you being on this show?
They're pretty excited. I mean, my mom openly. Now she just she sent me a text yesterday that was like, you know, honey, I was bragging at the laundromat. Like, she's using the word brag. I'm like, Mom, stop. Don't say bragging. She's like, but that's what I'm doing, honey. I'm bragging. I'm like, yeah.
Have they come to see the show?
My mom has, and both my brothers, and my mammo, that's my grandma. She's coming out next month, and I got to get my dad out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. It's very cool. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.